When employees feel cared about, 60% were planning to stay for their company for at least 3 years. And 90% were likely to recommend this place as a good place to work. 94% felt like they were personally engaged in their work. And here's what I think the kicker is, which is 94% say that they have better well-being in their lives when they felt like they were cared about by their manager.
Welcome to Management Development Unlocked, where you will learn how to nurture a world-class management team. And now your host, Eric Girard.
Welcome back to Management Development Unlocked. I am overjoyed that you are here. Please remember to review the show. This will really help it grow and reach more listeners. Today, I am delighted to have Ethan Nash with me. Ethan, welcome to the show. Who are you and what do you do?
Thanks, Eric. Good to see you. Good to see you on your show. Gosh, who am I? What do I do? Well, you know, I'm Ethan Nash, as you mentioned, and I'm out here in Seattle, Washington area. I'm here with my wife, our dog, and, you know, when we're not doing career-related stuff, we're out and about exploring the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, and I do management consulting, leadership development and training, and that's what I'll provide you.
Okay, awesome. Well, we will get deeper into your consulting practice a little bit later in the show. But anyway, I'm super glad you're here. Thank you for having me on your show. In the biz, this is what we call a content swap. So Ethan was kind enough to have me on his show, and then I bring him onto my show. And that way we each get to talk to different groups of listeners. So glad you're here.
So am I, Eric.
Yeah.
I've been looking forward to this.
Good. Excellent. Well, it's going to be a good time. Our topic today is the psychological contract, and this is all about the deal that you make with a boss. It's all about how much you're each willing to invest in each other. So the description that Ethan gave me to kick this off is, the more you invest in me, the more willing and able I am to invest back into you and the team. It's the idea that managers who definitely have a power differential over their employees need to demonstrate that they have their employees' best interest at heart in order for them to do their very best work. So, Ethan, I'm really excited to dig into this and see where we go.
Yeah, so am I. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's get a little backstory, a little background. So how did you get into the work that you do? Describe it for us, you know, maybe more of what you do and how you got there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you said this on when you came on my show, but we're all standing on shoulders of giants, right? And so I'm kind of, you know, I consider myself kind of the young buck in the leadership development game here. And, you know, I had a huge advantage to get into the game I'm in here, which is my father actually founded Nash Consulting in the early 90s, and he was a solo practitioner for almost two decades. And you know, I essentially was hearing management leadership talk at the dinner table growing up. And so, you know, after undergraduate, I got into some management positions. I was able to work my way up. And it became pretty clear that, you know, I really had a passion, like my father, for helping teams thrive to their best of their ability. And so at that point, it only made sense that we kind of joined forces here. And I managed the business side for a while, and we've since swapped roles where he's more focused on the business and I'm CEOing it. And that's the short story, somewhat short.
Yeah. So you got into consulting fairly early in your career. A lot of folks, you know, have a full career first and then get into consulting. And it sounds like you pretty soon after you started got into consulting right away. Is that accurate?
Yeah, pretty quickly. I had a stint outside of consulting for a while. But, you know, honestly, whether it was through high school, college, quickly after undergraduate, I was always in a position where I was leading groups somehow and teaching workshops and things like that. And so I got some, you know, I got some practice before coming in. And yeah, like I said, you know, having a father who's in this industry who has his own company sure helps with getting a jump start into the career.
Nice. Congratulations. Yeah. Glad it worked out.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm having a lot of fun. It's a good time.
Yeah. This is good stuff. All right. So given that we've established that you and I are both pretty much in the same line of work, we both like to help managers and teams. If there was just one thing you would want a manager of people to understand in order to be successful, what would that be?
Well, Eric, that's what you've already mentioned, which is I think it's the psychological contract, which is the point of our discussion today. Look, I mean, when I was in my first kind of real management position right after college, I mean, pretty quickly I was managing a team of 7 people or so. This concept of the psychological contract was not something I had on my radar. Now, I consider myself a good person. I think like everybody else out there that's listening to this. Yet it wasn't on my radar that I had to intentionally demonstrate investment into my team and my staff if I expected them to be fully engaged with what we're trying to do here. So the psychological contract, like if there was one thing that we could teach managers, that I could teach managers if I had 10 minutes with them and that's it, it'd be this, right? The more you invest in me, the more willing and able I am to volunteer my heart and my brain back into you, the organization, and the team.
That is good stuff. And I think that's the first time that concept has come up on this show. So I'm glad that you're bringing that knowledge. Yeah, well, absolutely. Say more about the psychological contract and why it's important.
Well, so it's generally the idea that managers, when you manage other people, you have what we call a power differential over them. I don't know if power differential has come up on the show. I'd imagine at some point or in some form.
You know, it hasn't really, but it's something that I studied in grad school. I have a master's in intercultural training, and power distance or power differential is a big thing, especially in certain Asian countries.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's something I studied in grad school as well, I think just under a different context, which is the context I'm speaking to right now, which is, look, whether you know it or not, there is a felt sense of power between you and your employees because you have some control over their lives. And I don't know if you would agree with this, Eric, but generally speaking, people don't really like other adults having control or authority over their lives. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Most people don't, right? And so I don't think this is consciously on our radars as leaders and managers. But there is a felt sense. You know, for example, do we have control over maybe their working hours, possibly, over their career development opportunities, over assignments and who gets assigned certain assignments? I mean, there's so many ways that we have some control and power over people. And so without that psychological contract in place, it can be terrifying. Consciously or subconsciously, to be in relationship with a manager that doesn't appear to have your best interest at heart. And that's what the psychological contract is about. Demonstrating through your actions that you really do have their best interests at heart. And then I can engage with what's going on here because there's some level of psychological safety that I'm sensing. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And I can think of examples, both pro and con, where I've had managers who were fantastic at creating psychological safety and honored that psychological contract. And I can think of managers who just trod all over it, you know, and maybe didn't even acknowledge that it existed. So, yeah, I mean, you get all kinds in Silicon Valley where I came from. And I was lucky to have a couple of really good ones. And unfortunately, I had a few bad ones.
I think most of us can relate to that, right? We can think of, in fact, you know, if you're listening to this, I encourage you to picture this, to visualize this. I mean, think of maybe the leaders in your life where you genuinely felt like they had your best interests at heart. What did they say? How did they behave? How did they show up? When I ask that, I usually find in most cases, people are alluding back to the power differential and alluding to the fact that this manager, whoever they were, was not exaggerating the power they had over them. But they weren't eliminating it either, right? But they were mitigating it to a point where it felt like, yeah, you know, there's some power for them to make decisions, but they're not doing the whole because I'm the boss type of vibe, right? And so on and so forth. So, you know, Eric, can I actually share something real quick on this, which is that, and I realize I didn't even wait for your response. I'm just going in. I'm going to share this, which is that there's this recent survey, and we can link to the show notes if need be, but I think it frames this very nicely. And so according to this recent survey, when employees feel cared about, 60% were planning to stay at their company for at least 3 years. And 90% were likely to recommend this place as a good place to work. 94% felt like they were personally engaged in their work. And here's what I think the kicker is, which is 94% say that they have better well-being in their lives when they felt like they were cared about by their manager. Better well-being in their lives. And I think that matters just on a human-to-human level. And when we feel like we have better well-being in our lives, we also do higher quality work. We're more engaged with the team. Having well-being in your life and doing high-quality work on your team are, of course, not mutually exclusive, which I know I'm preaching to the choir on that. But I think that's important to remember, is care and respect goes a long ways for achieving our goals and just making a difference in people's lives.
Oh, that's good stuff. Yeah, you are preaching to the choir. That goes to the research that my team and I have done on empathy and the impact of empathy on employees' lives and their likelihood to stay or leave. So, yeah, right on. Same thread. Good stuff.
Beautiful.
Well, let's talk a little bit about practicalities here. So we've set the stage. We've explained what the psychological contract is and why it's important. We've talked a little bit about how to create it. But I'd like to dive deep into what the practical ways are that a manager can develop the psychological contract with the people they manage. Specifically, tell me about some of the skills and behaviors that they can practice.
Yeah, good. Let's get practical here. So skills and behaviors. I don't know if this is a skill or a behavior, maybe it's a mindset, but let me start with, how about just a general commitment to self-awareness? Like, let's check that box right off the bat. We don't know what we don't know about how we show up and how we impact those around us. And I think, and I would bet that you would back me up on this, that to be an effective leader and to start developing this psychological contract, we have to be paying attention to our potential impact on other people. And that's getting curious with yourself and getting curious with your team. To get some data, to get some feedback, whether that's a 360-degree review, so you can understand kind of the baseline of where you're starting from in terms of their ability to feel safe and comfortable with you as their leader. So, I mean, start with self-awareness. Now, get a bit more practical here. The number one thing I recommend, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, to establishing the psychological contract is have regular scheduled one-on-one meetings with your direct reports. And another one that I'm preaching to the choir about, yes, I know, and I don't have to tell you this, but it's a good reminder for everybody out there that, and Microsoft actually studied this within their particular organization, but one of the strongest predictors of success of middle management was that they held frequent one-on-one meetings with their direct reports, right? And maybe we can bounce this back here. I mean, from your experience, Eric, and the beautiful work that you're doing out there. How do you see one-on-one meetings contribute to a sense of respect and feeling cared about?
Well, I think the way to answer that is to explain how I set up one-on-ones in my programs. So I introduce the idea of one-on-ones and give a little song and dance on how they should go. And then I talk about how one-on-ones are sacred time. So one-on-ones are sacred between you and your employee. And to the best of your ability, don't cancel them, don't reschedule them. So every Tuesday at 4, you get together, or every other Tuesday at 10 a.m., you get together for a little while. Do your best to keep that time reserved. Everybody understands that things come up and you have to move meetings around. That's okay, but never cancel with no reason. I remember I had a manager once who would just cancel one-on-ones at the last minute when they even decided to show up, because half the time I would be sitting there waiting and I would wait 20 minutes and no manager. And it felt incredibly disrespectful and incredibly, gosh, what's the word? Deflating, you know, to be ready to talk to my manager about a list of things that I wanted to move forward and to not have them come, or to have them come really late or to have them cancel 2 minutes before the meeting. So sacred time, I think that's is something that you should absolutely protect between you and your employees.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. I'm going to steal that if that's okay with you, Eric, that this is sacred time. And I like that intentional choice of words there. And yeah, you hit on the head. I mean, I can imagine in the situation where you're waiting 20 minutes for a meeting that was on your calendar when you have other work to do, I'd imagine you didn't feel very cared about or respected in that situation. Right?
Oh, not only did I not feel respected or cared about, but when I brought it up and mentioned that I felt pretty bad about that, I was wrong. I was the one who was made to feel wrong. Right. That there was something internal with me that must be catawampus to make that an issue. And I was just, man, it was it was a new twist on reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have some similar experiences, but I mean, circling back to just one-on-ones, yes, don't cancel them. Things will come up. Get ahead of it. Give a reason why, right? Always explain the why. But thinking about one-on-ones, if you're going to start building the psychological contract where people feel cared about and respected, I mean, how else are you going? I mean, there's plenty of ways to do that, but the best way to do that is in those one-on-one meetings, right? That's where you get to deliver on some of these skills and behaviors that would build this psychological contract. All right, I'll give you an example of a question that I love for one-on-one meetings. First, I show what we call the challenge competency continuum. So just think about a straight line with challenge on one side and competent on the other side. If I'm all the way to the competent side and I'm not challenged at all, you know, my job is probably going to feel a little mundane. Maybe I'm not super engaged. If I'm all the way on the challenge side, I mean, this is where I'm in fight, flight, or freeze all the time. This is where my job is so overwhelming that I'm also probably not super engaged and I'm not doing my best work. So what I like to ask people is, where would you put yourself on this challenge competency continuum? My first question. So already I'm showing that I care about where they're at here. The next question is, where would you like to be? And most of the time, people have an answer somewhere right in the middle. And my last question is, I don't know if you could guess it, but it's, how can I help you get there? So this is just one question, but this is the type of questions that you can use in your one-on-ones to show that you have their best interests at heart here. And that these one-on-ones are not just about your tasks and checking in on your tasks. Yes, use the one-on-ones for those. You want to have a task relationship balance. But it should be, I think, a pretty even balance between task and relationship if you're going to truly build that psychological safety and contract with them.
Love it. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a question that one of my colleagues and friends taught me and that I use in my book. And that is, you know, at some point during the one-on-one, asking, how are you? But really, how are you?
Yes.
You know, and demonstrating that level of care, you know, how are you? I'm fine. Well, really, how are you? Well, you know, and then you start to unpick from there. Not to become a therapist, not to suggest that the manager equals therapist equals counselor. That's what the EAP program is for. That's what HR is for. But to create that sense of bond and that sense of belonging to each other so you can talk about stuff, to deal with it so that you can get the work done. But you're not going to get any work done if there's something blocking you, if you're having a hard time with something in or outside of work. Then having that safe person to talk to is really vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you're not the therapist, right? And that's a really good reminder. Sometimes this can be overwhelming when managers and leaders are thinking about this. It's like, that's not me. That's not my style. No, with your style in your own flavor, treat this other person. I mean, just to come back to the golden rule, how you would like to be treated. Or even better yet, treat them how they would like to be treated based on getting curious with them. So if you're listening to this and you're a manager and leader and you want to either start having one-on-ones or improving your one-on-ones with the concept of the psychological contract in mind, just start listing some questions, right? And Eric, I know you have some great stuff in your book about this, but think about questions that are open-ended questions that are about them and understanding them, right? For example, I like to ask, What's your favorite part of the job? What's your least favorite part? Is anything slowing you down or blocking you right now with your work? How can I help support you? Hey, what feedback do you have for me about my approach, my style? I'm really open to that. It's these type of questions to understand them, get some feedback, and tailor your management approach to that person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good stuff. Nice. Well, I've got one final question for you, and then we'll turn it over to you. And that is, if you sense the psychological contract is broken between you and an employee, how might you go about repairing it?
Yeah. And that's a tricky question, right? It depends on how bad it's broken, of course. But, you know, here's what I would, where I would start. And by the way, and with full vulnerability, I have been here on both sides of this equation. I've been the person that had it broken with my manager, and I've clearly broken the psychological contract with my employees before. And part of that, I think, is starting with recognizing that and then coming with vulnerability. From, you know, human to human, we tend to respond pretty well to genuine vulnerability. So just to sit down and say, you know what? Here's the situation I realize that I've created through my behaviors and actions. Here's the sense that I have with our relationship and that it might not be totally where it needs to be. And you know what? Upon reflection, I can see how I have created those conditions for us. Some vulnerability, some humility. I mean, start there. I think it's as soon as we start going into problem solving without acknowledging the situation you're in and taking ownership for that, it's really hard to get to where you need to go. So I would start there and then coming, I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but I think it's true. Get curious with them. Ask for feedback and listen to it non-defensively. What would you like to see more of or less of from me? Those type of questions. And when they give you the answer, listen first. Like, just shut your mouth and listen, because you are going to be probably feeling defensive because you're a human being with an amygdala. And your brain can't tell the difference between social danger and physical danger in the first microseconds. So you're getting this feedback. You're going to get defensive. Hold back. Listen. And don't even feel like you have to respond into that conversation, right? Sit with that and then understand what actions you can take based off that feedback. So obviously there's a whole bunch more we could say about repairing, but I think if we can start there with vulnerability and humility and then asking for genuine feedback and receiving that non-defensively, I think that's a good start. And I don't know, would you add anything to that, Eric?
Well, I was just thinking vulnerability and humility, that would go a long way with me if I was an employee and a manager was trying to repair. So I'm just going to double down on what you said. So not to cop out, but I really like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's nothing extremely profound, but sometimes it's the least profound statements that are the deepest truths. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. We can start there.
Yeah. Very nice. All right. Let's flip it now. Let's talk a little bit about you personally, Ethan Nash. Tell us about your Managing with Mind and Heart Leadership Development Program.
Yeah. Okay. So Managing with Mind and Heart, this is a program that once again was, you know, started by my father. I think it started off as a 2-day program for 7 years, and it is now a 6-day comprehensive management skill program. And what I like to say about this is we don't spend a lot of time with a bunch of theory and kind of academic, you know, models and concepts. We really are getting down to kind of boots on the ground, practical, actionable skills and behaviors. All right. So we cover everything from the manager's mindset with the focus on self-awareness, understanding that it's your job to create morale, or at least mostly your job as a leader. Right. And we get into some emotional IQ type skills, like just how do we listen well so people feel heard and respected? How do we receive feedback non-defensively? How do we give feedback in a way that keeps you connected relationally while still telling your truth and being clear about that feedback? Okay, so we're covering those type of skills. We do some behavioral style works. We talk about how to run effective meetings, how to facilitate meetings for maximal participation. We spend a lot of time on one-on-ones, and I can keep going. These are 6 days. And so the whole point of the program is to, I mean, really it's centered around the psychological contract and all the skills that go to build that, as well as just how to be effective as a manager leading teams. So anyways, it's kind of our core product. And if you don't mind, I do just want to give a quick plug that we have, you know, just a couple times a year, we offer this program to the general public and in an online format. Typically, we're going into organizations and working with all their leaders, but in this case, it's open to everybody. We have one coming up this spring and this fall. And so with that, I do want to offer, if this is okay with you, I do want to offer a discount code to your listeners if they choose to sign up for this program. And I want to offer your listeners, if you're interested in showing up for this program, I want to offer you a discount code. And so you can actually use the code MUPOD24, Management Unlocked Pod, so MUPOD24, for 24% off of the cost to sign up for that program. So anyways, there's lots of good programs out there. Eric, you have one yourself. We have ours. I think there's a lot of overlap. But if you're interested, check that out. And you can just go to www.nashconsulting.com and you'll find a place to register there.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for the generous offer. 24% off.
24. It's very specific. Yes.
Okay, great. Well, Ethan, thank you so much. What a great conversation. In addition to your website, can people find you any other way?
Yeah, I'm pretty hidden from most of the social media platforms, but you can find me on LinkedIn. And again, my name's just Ethan Nash, and you can probably maybe link to that in the show notes.
Yep. Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. We'll put the discount code in the show notes. Awesome. All right. Well,
terrific.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the show and connect to me on LinkedIn. Pick up my new book, Lead Like a Pro, The Essential Guide for New Managers, available on Amazon. We will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Management Development Unlocked. Want more? Get a ton of insider tips and tools at GerardTrainingSolutions.com.